newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is a half hour of commentary and analysis where we explore some of the key media issues of the day and talk about ethical decision making in the newsroom with some veteran journalists. I'm Rex Smith, formerly editor of the Times Union, now publishing The Upstate American on Substack. And I'm here in Studio D at WAMC with Judy Patrick and Barbara Lombardo, my colleagues, former editors. Y'all doing okay?
You know, they took away our bell.
Oh, we don't have the WAMC
But they
bell.
Left me a loose screw on the table here. So there you go.
Not referring to anyone else in the room here. No, there's actually literally a little screw on the table here. What do you suppose that came out of? Your microphone is probably going to fall off the stand here.
Stay tuned.
Barbara, you okay? Doing last-minute research on your phone?
I'm doing my homework.
Okay, very good, very good. We're going to talk about a couple of interesting issues today that have to do with a national issue that we local journalists know something about. Now, let me just give background here so that people understand who we're talking to. Judy and Barbara and I were longtime editors of local news organizations. And a key point that I think is important for us to make is that while we have not run big national newsrooms, the essence of what we did every day was decision-making in the interest of ethical journalism. And that requires dealing with personnel. It requires news judgment. That is no less true when you're talking about local stories than it is national, which is why we're going to talk here about what's going on at CBS News, where a new leader has taken over at the behest of new owners. That leader, of course, we've talked about this before, Barry Weiss, who is an opinion journalist, never covered a news story, by the way, and never had run a large organization. After being an essay and opinion writer, she called Free Press, which was bought by the same people who bought Paramount, which owns CBS. And that would be David Ellison, the CEO, who inherited extreme wealth. And David Ellison...
Jealous? See, he's injecting a little bit of bias into his presentation there.
Do you think? Yeah, just a bit. And of course, we have charted on this program, as folks have read in the news media, a lot about the chaos. That might be a too strong a word. The upending of CBS News, once one of the great, most trusted news organizations in America, still one of the three big networks, but no longer was it the Tiffany Network, as it was called when Walter Cronkite ruled the airwaves in the 60s and 70s. Still, Barry Weiss having taken over has led to all kinds of changes. Most recently, leading to the firing of Scott Pelley, one of the correspondents at 60 Minutes, and what seems to be the dissolution of the most successful television news program in history, which is, in terms of ratings at least, sustained over the years, 60 Minutes. So, I've given enough background here. Why don't you all give me some thoughts? Judy Patrick, formerly editor of the Daily Gazette of Schenectady, you ran a newsroom. You have a lot more news leadership experience than Barry Weiss.
I do. That's easy to say, though, isn't it?
Isn't it?
It is difficult to run a newsroom because you have, the news part of it is really easy, kind of. If you've been in the business long enough, making those kind of ethical decisions, it does fairly easy to do the management side, though. Running the budgets, all the personnel issues, those are the trickier issues. That being said, we knew this was coming. When they hired Barry Weiss, we all talked about the fact that she had no experience doing any of that, and also that she was bringing a disposition to bend over backwards in support of the Trump administration. She cloaks it in this idea that we're being more fair. Well, 60 Minutes was fair. 60 Minutes was Sunday evening must-watch TV for generations, for decades. I mean, this is Cronkite. This is Rather. This is
Morley Saver, Mike Wallace, Harry Reasoner, Ed Bradley.
Yeah, yes, this is, so I mean, they have done some stellar reports over the years. They, you know, they do their fluff pieces, celebrity interviews once in a while. But she wants to reform this, remake this. And people like Scott Pelley, I think she was more than happy to see him walk out the door, because what he brought was an institutional approach to his work that was ethically based. And what we're seeing more and more, especially in corporate journalism, is this idea that we're going to not make any waves. We're going to do what the Trump administration wants us to do. We're going to publish their or air their interviews verbatim. We're not going to do any editing. We're not going to, I mean, Anderson Cooper has left. John Dickerson left the CBS Evening News. They've got this Tony
Dupakil.
And my point also with CBS is that it's broadcast. It's free. And as we go forward in life, poor people are going to be less able to afford access to quality journalism. And broadcast television is one of the things that offers that to them. And so that's why I'm especially concerned about the degradation of CBS News.
Barbara Lombardo, I want to just make a point before you speak. You led the Saratoga Newsroom for how many years?
Almost 40.
No kidding. Is that right? 40 years.
You know, 30, you know, 30 and change.
So, and then you were also brought in to lead the Record of Troy as...
Right. So the last two or three years, the company that ultimately owned the Saratogian also owned the Record in Troy. And then part of their synergy, a word that still makes me quake, they decided to merge the staffs of those two so that I became the editor of both of those newspapers.
So I just want to make that point, because I think it's interesting that you were brought in over an existing news organization where there was hierarchy, where there were traditions. I was the editor of the Record of Troy in the early 90s. And so I came in as head of an organization that already had a lot going on, where everybody was there.
And two distinct markets with distinct staffs serving different kinds of communities.
So you can understand why there would be a challenge for Barry Weiss coming in as the head of a news organization, having not been at the helm of it.
Oh, I'm not going to compare myself there. So, you know, that was a difficult time in a lot of ways. And my colleague, who was like my counterpart at the Record at the time, ended up becoming the number two person of both papers. So we still worked together. And understandably, because we were mostly based in Saratoga, if I was working in Troy and trying to represent them, I would feel like that we were getting shafted and like, what do they know in Saratoga? But there were a lot of differences, because we kept that staff and they continued to do what they were doing, although we had to double up on coverage and, you know, have repeat coverage in both markets, even though the stories might not have been that interesting to the other market.
But if the independence of reporters to pursue stories is part of what they need to have to succeed, right? They need to go out and do this on their own.
Right. And it helps to have people with institutional knowledge to do that. So I was poorly equipped to lead a community newspaper in a town that I had not been part of the community. So I felt very comfortable in Saratoga Springs. You know who's who and what's what. And my colleague, Lisa, knew very well the people in Rensselaer County in the Troy area. So she was able to continue that, which is unlike what's happening at CBS.
Yeah, I don't think they want to maintain the institution of 60 Minutes. I think they want the outer wrapping of it, but I think they want to totally transform that thing. They see the existing situation as a bunch of dinosaurs pursuing stories the old-fashioned way, and they're going to do it their way. I think she didn't even... that she's just steamrolling it. I don't think she's trying to gather support. Now, the question is, I always talk about, you know, reporters think that they can say whatever they want in a free meeting and approach their superiors and question authority, because that's what we pay them to do all the time. But if you're in the middle of a staff meeting, if someone like Scott Pelley stands up and starts criticizing you, what do you do about that? That is a management decision.
It is actually, of course. And their point of view was this, as the new executive producer wrote to Scott Pelley, your antipathy to the future of the show has come through loud and clear, because what happened was Scott Pelley stood up in a staff meeting and criticized him with what Bilton, the new EP, called a performative display of hostility.
And then it was leaked. leaked, right?
The
conversation was taped and leaked. That's how people know about it.
Well, you don't have a meeting with a whole lot of journalists, not expect everybody's going
to
know about it.
Just to explain to listeners how they knew.
Right. And probably Scott Pelley knew that this was going to lead to his demise. But you have to wonder if Barry Weiss really took over CBS News imagining, did she think she was going to clean house or did she think she was going to be able to get people to step in line? If she wanted people to step in line behind her, she has performed very badly because her leadership skills are, frankly, kind of on a plane with those of some new college student government
president.
Yeah,
I don't think she cared either way. She needs to run it her way. And if it needs to be with new people, all the better. They probably will come in cheaper, possibly, and fewer of them, and they will do whatever she wants. You're not going to be able to bend somebody's will. Now, three of us here have started at the entry-level positions and worked our way up to, and then we ended up all as managers of our newspapers. And there'd be no question that you would have to fire Scott. In my mind, he was asking to be fired, but he got his last licks in a way that he got a lot of publicity for the way this was conducted.
But of course, it shouldn't have come to that, right? My employer, when I came to Hearst, invested a lot of money in management training. I mean, actually, I even got to go to the Army War College for a training session. How about that? Isn't that cool?
Well, is that where you got the cowboy boots?
Yeah, no. No, they gave me cowboy boots
another
time.
Yeah, I went to an Associated Press Managing Editors National program.
Yeah,
there might have been a Poynter Institute.
Sure, all kinds of stuff like that, where we learn some of this stuff. And Barry Weiss, I think, has had no leadership training that I can discern, nor does she exhibit any skills. So you have to wonder if it was her intent to tear everything up or if it's her ineptitude that's leading to it.
She could have really turned everything around by just saying, you know what, you're right, Scott, or, you know, and not doing it and keeping him on. I think that would have made us here, you know, take a second look at her.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Like, he's saying you're murdering the show?
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your input. But he got to say it, because another way to leave is to say, this is untenable. They are asking us to tone down what we say or to do things that we think are unethical, to not tell the full truth or to color what we're trying to say. But he did say things like that. So I'm resigning. And that would have been a lot duller and more easily forgotten.
Yes, but it shouldn't have come to that in a news organization where trust is the fundamental element here. You know, why would somebody now who wants unbiased news turn to CBS? Why would you ever think that CBS has the capacity to deliver fair and, pardon the phrase, fair and balanced news, since that was hijacked by Fox News many years ago. But I think the interesting problem that is now confronting CBS is how in the world they can ever regain viewers' trust, short of getting rid of Barry Weiss.
Or it becomes other viewers. You know, it's not the same people who have trusted them for years. Or it's some of those people who are saying, well, let's give it a try and let's see what happens with skepticism. Or people, they don't care if it's old listeners or viewers or new viewers. They think they're coming up with a format for that time slot that's going to bring in new viewers. That's all about the money, right?
Maybe they just think they're going to siphon off viewers from Fox. Maybe CBS News is going to become the Fox for the next generation.
You
know,
there's a competition for that market, and I don't think those guys change the channel that often. And then there's Newsmax. There's an assortment of those. It's a very sad day. I wish that Scott Pelley would come forward and tell us details about what management was trying to inject into his stories that he said were mistruths or lies. And I'm looking forward to his book, which we imagine he will write.
Of course, you're right.
What do you advise for the remaining people?
Well, that's a very interesting question. Would you stay if you were in Leslie Stahl's shoes or if
Bill Whitaker?
There are the remaining correspondents. Yeah. The third being the sports correspondent, whose name escapes me at this moment. Sorry. And by the way, sports investigative reporting is a great field because of the money that Americans spend on sports and sports marketing. That's a great beat. So it's great that 60 Minutes has someone in that. But clearly, if you were a part of CBS News now, would you stay? I think everybody has got to be having their resumes and resume tapes out there for other people to be looking at.
And I don't think we even mentioned at the end of May when CBS News Radio was shuttered.
Yes, we left that off the show.
I think just the timing of when it happened and what we were talking about.
But there were still about 100 stations carrying CBS News. I mean, I grew up with CBS Radio News, that little tone at the top of the hour, ding, da-da-da-da-da. Did you like that? I sing with Albany Pro Musica. Yeah. This is one of those little sounds that you grow up with and that you remember. And that's gone now. And that, too, is part of the legacy now of Barry Weiss and the words of Scott Pelley murdering CBS News.
You know, we keep blaming Barry Weiss. I mean, it's really her bosses.
It's the owners,
isn't it?
It's
the owners and what they want out of all of this.
Which makes a point about how important media ownership is. Now, you were mentioning, Barbara, that the company you worked for brought together these newsrooms to try to economize. And I think you would, you're a great example of knowing what an impact ownership can have on a news organization.
Oh, absolutely. And the skepticism of when they're going to pretend that they're going to be investing in you or making things better.
Mm-hmm. You know, we always talk about, you know, it's a business. You know, we need to look at journalism as a business. Well, it's not just a business. We don't produce widgets. We don't have factories. We have a higher calling. So we have to take that in consideration as well. It's not just a business, and it shouldn't be run just like a business.
Good publishers recognize that. Good owners of news organizations will, not that they're not trying to make a profit if it's privately held, but they are assessing the fact that they will take a lower profit to sustain the kind of business that they're in.
Right.
And I think being here on the public airwaves, we need to make a point that the ownership of public media is the general public. There is no owner to WAMC. There is a board of directors that is self-sustaining, that is, they elect new directors. But this public company operates under the auspices of a state charter, which is what kind of governs it. But there isn't, if you will, there's ownership in the community for public media.
Right. And when you're a nonprofit, it doesn't mean you don't have to raise a lot of money, because it costs money to produce your product, which is not a widget, and
right.
pay your staff, the overhead costs of running a business. So even at a nonprofit, they have to be cognizant all the time about what they are doing and how it's going to affect their bottom line. And then you trust that they are going to be holding themselves to the highest ethical standards.
You know, the thing about 60 Minutes was that it was a very successful show that did very well in terms of ratings. And so they're messing with something that was successful. And that's crazy. Maybe they were seeing something that we didn't see. I'd love to see the goal that Barry Weiss has come up with, you know, the overarching strategy for what she was going to do with this, you know, this treasure that we baby boomers look on as CBS News.
Yeah.
You know this saying of nature abhors a vacuum. If CBS 60 Minutes no longer has those in-depth reports on things that might make an administration uncomfortable and private businesses that might be friends of the administration uncomfortable, who else will be doing them?
Yes, exactly. And we'll be doing them with public access, to Judy's point about the fact that folks who don't have expensive cable packages or don't pay to get behind a paywall, who else will be able to see this stuff? Very worthwhile. Folks, if you have thoughts about this, we are the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. media@wamc.org is how you can send us some information. We'd love to see it. I'm Rex Smith here with Barbara Lombardo and Judy Patrick, and we're talking about what's going on in the media. One of the good things about good ownership of the media is they will stand up to government, to public officials who are attempting to interfere with access. And we have an example of that right now with ABC filing paperwork to renew its local TV station licenses. They have to file that paperwork. They're trying to renew their licenses because the Federal Communications Commission, in an extraordinary action, is, even though the current licenses don't expire for years, now Donald Trump's FCC is pressuring ABC and its parent company, Disney, challenging the licenses, a probe, they say, into diversity initiatives. That shame on Disney and ABC for caring about diversity, and therefore they're discriminated against people based on race, gender, and other protected characteristics. So good for ABC for going to court, for fighting to keep the licenses in the face of what seems to be an intent to...
Well, intimidate them into
intimidate.
Folding.
Yeah.
Right. They're messing with them. This is The View. This is Jimmy Kimmel, right? This is all about flexing whatever muscle you have. These were long-term licenses, or these are long-term licenses, and the long-term nature of them is important because it allows the broadcasters to invest in equipment and in personnel because this is an important public commodity. And it used to be fairly pro forma. To have your license threatened was very, very rare. And I used to try to write stories about the FCC, and there was so little news out of the FCC that it was hard to write. I used to be a media reporter, and the fact that they are doing this, just intimidation, cleared intimidation, and kudos for ABC for standing up, at least for now.
And those contracts, it's not like a Supreme Court judgeship. Are they like 10 years, I think, something like that?
Right.
Which is a reasonable length of time, and the fact that they're just pulling it out of their ear now, it is important that ABC fights it, and it's important that the media report on it, because people might say, well, so what's wrong with holding? Yeah, they've had too much free rein and they should be held accountable for what they're doing. But that's not what this is about.
And of course, free rein is what the First Amendment is all about. Free rein is actually required by the Constitution of the United States. And a government that takes aim at a powerful network can just as easily take aim at individual citizens, can shut down whatever news organizations you don't happen to like. I mean, imagine if the Biden administration had gone after Fox News. Imagine if anything of that sort were going on under a different administration. There would be an outcry. And so we're glad, and this again is an example of a news organization standing up to government. Here's another way in which journalists have to stand up to officialdom, and that is simply a matter of access. Now, in each of our newsrooms, we have had to deal with public officials who are making it difficult for our reporters to do the job. I mean, we just saw an example of this the other day here in Albany County, actually, where a reporter was trying to get information about a public relations expenditure by the Albany County government. And the reporter for the Times Union was getting the cold shoulder from Albany County Executive Dan McCoy. And accidentally, the county spokesperson, the woman who is the public face for McCoy, sent an email to the Times Union that wasn't intended for them. The email text said, "Not responding, as we are not responding to any Times Union requests." So the Albany County government, by official policy, doesn't speak to the dominant news organization in Albany County. This, of course, is a tactic that we see, but these days it seems as though this kind of approach to the media, this government effort to stifle the news media by simply refusing to talk to them, is increasingly prevalent, right?
I didn't realize how prevalent until reading an article the other night about this issue and how it happens all over the country in towns where cities where they are banning their local news media from covering them.
Right, and it seems like it's an approach that you're getting approval from on high, from if the president hates the press, then this can filter down. I mean, this has always been an issue, but the intensity of it has increased dramatically in the last few years. And I used to always tell people who would shut us out is, you're not just shutting this news organization out, you're shutting all the people who are our readers out, all of our listeners, all of our viewers. You are rejecting the people you were supposed to represent. And I know it seems like a parochial news media issue, but it's something that every person who lives in Albany County should be concerned about.
That's right. It's not parochial. Everybody should be concerned about it. And when you said if Biden had tried to shut out Fox, there would be an uproar. So locally, you would think that people understood that the Times Union was being shut out of their county government. You'd wish that there would be an uproar. Most people don't give a hoot about county government. They couldn't tell you who right. their county people are or
yeah.
what they're doing.
Yeah.
So there's that lack of sense of urgency about it. This is bad.
But you
here.
Would wish, too, that reporters would sort of stand shoulder to shoulder. When the president attacks Caitlin Collins of CNN.
Once again,
mm-hmm. yes, he does really like to take on women reporters in particular. You know, he's such a genial fellow in his relations with women. you would think that other reporters would stand up and say, Mr. President, the question she just asked, let me rephrase it and ask the same damn question, right?
Right.
I don't understand why the news media doesn't stand shoulder to shoulder and demand that answers be given when reporters are being targeted by public officials.
We've said this time and time again. Aren't they listening to the Media Project down there in Washington?
You know, saying this reminds me that the last time I was on, I thought I would do some homework. I promised to do some homework and contact the White House press corps, and I failed to do that.
Okay, put that
back
on your
to-do
list. And can you tell them we don't think it's a good idea for them to have lunch with the president in July to correspondence dinner? What a bad idea.
And then we can talk about the LCA, the Legislative Correspondents Association.
There'll be more.
Here in Albany.
There's always more to talk about.
Can we make this an hour? We got a lot to talk about.
next show, ladies and gentlemen. That's all we have time for this week on The Media Project, and we are grateful to you for joining us. Barbara Lombardo, Judy Patrick, and I'm Rex Smith. We're grateful to the producer of The Media Project, David Gustina, and to you folks for joining us. Come back again next week. There's more on The Media Project.
Now you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to buy a new fur coat. To get insurance, she employed skullduggery. She up and cut her husband's only throat. She chopped him into fragments. She stuffed him in a trunk. She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspapermen meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's unk. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen.
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith, Judy Patrick, former editor of the Daily Gazette and former vice president for editorial development for the New York Press Association, and Raga Justin, Albany bureau chief for Bloomberg Government. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
Living stage now, newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy's an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.